She's good. Card didn't reply. Shada was back on her feet now, and the two remaining swoops had pulled their circle a little farther back, as if afraid to let her get too close. If they decided that she wasn't worth the risk of another wreck and pulled their blasters... And then he noticed one of the swoopers glaring at the trio of legionnaires. And with that single look, he realized that the use of blasters was now completely out of the question. With this many witnesses watching, pride alone dictated that they deal with her without weapons. The two swoops were circling.
Come on, Barksy, the head legionnaire called. Not afraid, are you?
Strobing, Merc!
One of the swoopers snapped back.
That's Lieutenant Merc to you, scum,
the legionnaire murmured under his breath. Abruptly, Barksy swung his swoop out of the circle and charged inward. The same basic technique his predecessor had tried, and Card found himself holding his breath as Shada again fell back onto the sand ahead of its advance. Surely the swooper couldn't be so stupid as to try the same trick again. He wasn't. Even as Shada hit the ground, he pulled back hard on his handlebar controls, the swoop's nose rearing up as the vehicle slid a couple of meters farther before pulling to a hard stop. With a triumphal shout, he swiveled 180 degrees and brought the swoop's nose down hard on the spot where Shada had landed. But Shada was no longer there. Instead of simply hitting the sand and staying there as she had the last time, she had instead thrown her body into a convulsive wave-like movement as she hit the ground, her arching back and legs bouncing her off the sand and up into an impossible-looking hand and foot grip on the underside of the swoop. Somehow, she managed to hold on through the spin and nose slam, and as the swooper leaned over, open-mouthed for a closer look at the empty ground where his victim should have been, she unhooked one of her feet from its perch and landed a solid kick against the side of his head. Beside Card, the lieutenant clucked his tongue.
I don't believe it, he muttered.
Clearly as stunned as Barksy had been before Shada's kick cleaned all confusion from his mind.
Who is this Bashy anyway?
One of the best in the business,
Card assured him, pitching his voice in the sort of low, confidential tone that just naturally seemed to go along with the half-step he took toward the man. Another step the same size, he estimated, and he would be close enough.
Actually, that was nothing,
he added, lowering his voice still more and simultaneously taking that extra half step.
Wait till you see what she does to this one.
He threw a careful glance to his side. The lieutenant was hooked all right, staring in glassy-eyed fascination at the drama in the square, waiting to see what magic the mysterious woman would pull next from her sleeve. The last swooper seemed to make up his mind. Pulling out of his circle at the far end of the square, he leaned low over his handlebar controllers and charged. Shada feinted left and then dodged right, the end of the jutting thrust nozzles missing her hip by bare centimeters. The swooper spun the vehicle hard around, clearly hoping to catch her from the side with the long nose of the swoop. But he had misjudged his speed, and the swinging maneuvering vanes scythed past her with plenty of room to spare. It took him a few more meters to kill his spin and momentum, bringing himself to a halt no more than 3 meters from Card and the Legionnaires. He swiveled around again to face Shada, shoulders hunched with anticipation, and with a smoothly casual movement, Card plucked the tangle gun from the Legionnaire's hand and fired. The swooper screeched an air-blistering curse as the semi-plastic webbing slammed into his back, whipping around him and pinioning his arms solidly to his sides.
As you were, gentlemen,
Card said mildly, taking a long step away from the legionnaires and shifting his aim to cover them.
Cute,
the lieutenant said. Oddly enough, he didn't seem particularly upset.
Real cute.
I thought you'd like it,
Card said, nodding to the other two legionnaires.
Your weapons on the ground, please.
That won't be necessary,
a suave voice said from somewhere above him. Card risked a quick glance,
but he could see no one.
No, I'm not there,
the voice assured him, a touch of amusement in his tone.
I've been watching your performance from inside my casino, and I must admit to being impressed by your work. Tell me, what is it you want here?
To see you, of course, Lord Bombassa,
Card said to the hidden speaker.
I had hoped to collect on an old debt.
The lieutenant made an uncomfortable-sounding noise in his throat, but Bombassa merely laughed.
I am aware of no debt I owe you, my friend. But by all means, let us talk about it. Lieutenant Maxity?
Sir?
The lieutenant said, straightening automatically to attention.
Give the gentleman back his blaster, and escort him and the lady into the casino, and have your men clean the garbage out of the square.
The interior of the thruster burn was a sharp contrast to the climate outside. A sharp contrast, for that matter, with nearly every low-rent cantina and tap caf Shada had ever been in. The air was cool and comfortably dry, and while the booths lining the walls were dark enough to ensure privacy, the rest of the tap caf was bright and almost cheerful. Not that the current clientele was the sort that would appreciate such homey touches. There were about 20 of them, stamped template copies of the four she'd disposed of outside, all glaring balefully at the newcomers from their group of tables in one of the corners by the curved bar. Briefly, Shada wondered if Bombassa had told them their sentries were being unceremoniously carted out of the square outside, but quickly dismissed the thought. A man who owned this kind of tap calf would be unlikely to risk it by deliberately inviting a fight inside. Nevertheless, she kept an eye on the swoopers as Lieutenant Maxity led them across the main area to an unobtrusive door at the back of the dance floor. The door opened as they approached, giving them a glimpse of a small back room, and a large, dark-eyed human stepped out. He threw a measuring glance at Card, an even longer look at Shada, and then nodded to the Legionnaire.
Thanks,
he said to the latter, dismissing him with that single word, then looked back at Card.
Come on in,
he invited, stepping aside to let them pass. The back room had been fitted out as a compact casino, with four tables around which a dozen or so beings of various species were busily engaged in a variety of card and dice games. With their minds and hopes pinned to their money, it was doubtful any of them even realized anyone new had come in. All except one. A short, pudgy human with thin, stick-like arms. He sat alone at the largest table, his slightly bulging eyes focused unblinkingly on Card and Shada as they stepped into the room. Two large men with the same bodyguard look as the one now closing the door behind them stood at attention beside the pudgy man's chair, also eyeing the newcomers. Shada grimaced, not liking this at all. But Card didn't hesitate.
Good day, Lord Bombassa,
he said, stepping right up to the edge of the table.
Thank you for seeing us on such short notice.
The two bodyguards seemed tense, but Bombassa merely smiled thinly.
Like the legendary Rustus Call, I am always available to those who intrigue me,
he said smoothly.
And you do indeed intrigue me.
His insect-like eyes shifted to Shada.
Though for a moment there, I thought you had run out of tricks,
he added.
If your companion hadn't snatched the lieutenant's tangle gun, you would have been in trouble.
Hardly, Shada told him coolly. I caught a reflection of him moving toward the Legionnaires and guessed he was about to try something. If it didn't work, he was going to need my help right away, and the swooper would keep.
Bombassa shook his head admiringly.
An amazing display, my dear. Truly amazing. Though I'm afraid that in the process you've ruined your gown. Perhaps I can arrange to have it cleaned before your departure.
That's most generous of you, my lord, Card said before she could answer. But I'm afraid we won't be able to stay on Pembroke that long. Bombasa smiled again, but this time there was a distinct glint of menace to the expression.
That remains to be seen, my friend, he warned darkly. And if you're another New Republic or Cathal sector emissary seeking to annex my territory, you may find your departure considerably delayed.
I have no ties to any governmental group, Card assured him. I'm merely a private citizen here to ask a favor.
Indeed,
Bombasa said, toying idly with the subtly glittering throat pendant around his neck.
I have the distinct impression you don't realize what my favors cost.
I believe you'll find this one has already been paid for, Card countered. And it is only a small favor, after all. We have an errand to run inside your cartel's territory, and we'd like safe passage through your various pirate and hijacking gangs until we've completed it. Bombasa's eyes widened politely.
Is that all?
He said.
Come, come, my dear sir. A large, tempting target like your freighter, and you want safe passage?
He shook his head sadly.
No, you don't understand my fee scale at all.
Shada felt her muscles tensing, consciously relaxed them. All three bodyguards were armed and competent-looking, but if nudge came to punch, she doubted any of them had ever faced a Mistral before. Unfortunately, unlike the case with the swoopers, she wouldn't have the luxury of leaving them damaged but alive. She would have to take out the one behind them first. My mistake, Card said, his tone almost offhanded. I assumed that when someone had saved your life, you would be more grateful. Bombasa had been in the process of lifting a finger toward the bodyguard standing beside him. Now, at Card's words, he froze, the finger poised in midair.
What are you talking about?
He demanded cautiously. I'm talking about a situation that occurred here a little over 6 years ago, Card said. One in which a rather dapper gentleman and a young lady with red gold hair foiled an assassination plot against you. For a pair of heartbeats, Bombasa continued to stare at Card. Shada threw a surreptitious glance at the two bodyguards, mentally plotting out her attack plan. And with a suddenness that startled her, Bombasa burst out laughing. The other gamblers in the casino paused in their activities, turning to gape momentarily at what was apparently an uncommon sound in their quietly desperate little world. Bombasa, still laughing, gave a hand signal, and the bodyguards visibly relaxed.
Ah, my friend, he said, still chuckling. My friend, indeed. So you're the mysterious chieftain the young lady spoke of when she refused to accept any payment.
I'm the one, Card said, nodding. I believe she also suggested that a man of your obvious breeding wouldn't mind carrying the debt until it could be properly repaid.
She did indeed.
Bombasa waved a thin hand at Shada.
And now you bring this one. I would never have expected there to even exist two such beautiful yet deadly ladies, let alone loyal to the same man.
He cocked an eye toward Shada.
Or are you committed to this man, my dear?
He added.
If you would be interested in discussing a change of career, I could make it well worth your while.
I'm not committed to anyone,
Shada said, the words hurting her throat as she said them.
But for the moment, I'm traveling with him.
Bombasa peered closely at her, as if trying to gauge her sincerity, then shrugged.
And if you should change your mind, you have merely to come see me, he said. My door will always be open to you.
He returned his attention to Card.
You are right. I do indeed owe you, he said. Before you leave, I'll provide you with a special ID overlay for your ship that will identify you as being under my protection.
His lips compressed.
However, though it will certainly protect you from members of my cartel, it may at the same time create extra danger for you. Over the past year, a vicious new pirate gang has relocated to this area, one which we have so far been unable to either eliminate or bring under our control. I suspect they would consider a freighter under my protection to be a particularly intriguing challenge.
Card shrugged. As you pointed out earlier, we would be a tempting target regardless of that. We are, of course, not nearly as vulnerable as we appear.
I have no doubt of that,
Bombassa said.
However, the enemy is quite well equipped, with a sizable fleet of Sorosub Corsair-class assault starfighters, as well as a number of larger ships. If you can spare the time, perhaps you would allow my people to do some quick upgrades of your weaponry or shields.
I appreciate your offer, Card said. And if circumstances were otherwise, I would be all too happy to accept. But I'm afraid our errand is a pressing one, and we simply can't afford to take the time.
Nah,
Bombassa said.
Very well, then. Leave when you must. The ID overlay will be ready when you are.
He smiled slyly.
And of course, for you, there will be no exit visa required.
You're most generous, my lord,
Card said, bowing slightly at the waist.
Thank you, and the debt is now paid.
Taking Shada's arm, he turned to go.
One other thing, my friend,
Bombassa called them back.
Neither of your associates gave me their names when they were here, nor would they tell me yours. I would appreciate it if you would satisfy my curiosity.
Beside her, Shada sensed Card brace himself.
Of course, Lord Bombassa. My name is Talon Card.
The pudgy figure seemed to sit up a little straighter.
Talon Card?
He breathed.
Indeed. Some of my business associates have spoken of you. Often at great length.
I'm sure they have, Card said. Particularly those Hutt agencies with whom your cartel has ties.
For a moment, Bombassa's eyes narrowed. Then his expression cleared, and he smiled again.
The Hutts are right. You indeed know far more than is healthy for you. Still, as long as you don't seek to extend your organization into my territory, what have I to fear?
Nothing at all, my lord.
Card agreed.
Thank you for your hospitality. Perhaps we shall meet again someday.
Yes,
Bombassa said softly.
There is always that chance.
The Legionnaire Lieutenant Maxity offered to get them a ride back to their landing pad, but Card declined. It was only a short walk, after all. And after a taste of the Pembroke climate, the somewhat austere conditions aboard the Wild Card would seem that much more pleasant. Besides, after the tone of that last exchange with Bombassa, it wouldn't do to look as if they were hurrying to get away from him.
"Who's Rustus Call?"
Shada asked. With an effort, Card brought his mind back from dark visions of vengeful crime lords having second thoughts.
Who?
Rustus Call, she repeated. Bombassa dropped the name right after we were shown in.
He was a fictional character from some masterpiece of Corellian literature, Card said. I forget which one. Bombassa is quite literate, or so I've heard. Apparently, he likes to consider himself a cultured sort of cutthroat. Shada snorted.
Cultured? But he deals with huts.
Card shrugged.
I agree. One reason the huts and I don't get along, I suppose.
For a minute, they walked in silence.
You knew he was connected with the hut syndicates,
Shada said.
Yet you told him who you were. Why?
I'm not expecting Bombassa to renege on his deal with us, if that's what you're worried about, Card said. Cultured beings always repay their debts, and Mara and Lando did indeed save his life.
The question wasn't so much about Bombassa as it was about you,
Shada countered.
He didn't need to know who you were, and I've seen your expertise at dodging questions you don't want to answer. So why did you tell him?
Because I'm guessing word of this encounter will get back to Georges Cardass,
Card said quietly.
This way, he'll know it's me who's coming to see him. He sent Shada a frown.
Excuse me, I thought the idea was for us to sneak up quietly on him.
The idea is to see if he has a copy of the Ka'amas document, Card corrected her. If we appear suddenly, without any warning, he's liable to simply kill all of us before we have a chance to talk to him.
And if he does know we're coming?
Shada retorted.
Sounds to me like all it does is give him more preparation time.
Exactly, Card said soberly. And if he feels ready for us, he may be more inclined to listen before he shoots.
You seem convinced he'll shoot.
Card hesitated. Should he tell her, he wondered, exactly why he'd allowed her to come on this trip?
No, he decided.
Not yet.
At best, she would probably feel insulted or offended. At worst, she might refuse to go along with it at all.
I think there's a good chance he will, yes, he said instead.
Knowing that it's you?
Card nodded.
Knowing that it's me.
Aha,
Shada said.
What did you do to this guy anyway?
Card felt a muscle twitch in his jaw.
I stole something from him, he told her. Something he valued more than anything else in the universe.
Probably more than he valued his own life. They walked in silence for another few steps.
Go on,
Shada prompted.
Card forced a smile.
I only promised you half the story today,
he reminded her, trying to put some lightness into his tone.
That was it. Your turn.
What, why I left Mazik?
Shada shrugged.
There's not much to tell. I left because a bodyguard who becomes a target herself can't do much good for anyone else.
So Shada had become a target. That was very interesting indeed.
May I ask who's suicidal enough to be gunning for you?
Sure. Go ahead and ask,
Shada said.
You're not going to get an answer, though. Not until I get the rest of the Cardass story.
Somehow I was expecting you to say that, Card murmured.
So when do I get it?
Card looked up through the haze at the dim glow of Pembroke's sun.
Soon, he promised. Very soon.
Chapter 5.
The sixth sumptuous hour of the 15th glorious day of the yearly Kanchen Sector Conference now begins,
the herald intoned, his deep voice echoing across the bowl-shaped field where the various delegates sat, squatted, lay, or crouched, according to their species' particular physiological design.
Let us hail and magnify the grandiose elector of Patrick Major, and bid him express his sublime and all-encompassing wisdom in his leading of this gathering.
The assembled beings called or growled their agreement with the herald's sentiment,
all but Han, and lounging beside him on the feathery mat grass, Leia had to smile in private amusement. Coming out here had been Han's idea, after all. A temporary respite from the bitter dissension and gnawing suspicions that had been churning through the New Republic government ever since that partially destroyed copy of the Ka-Moss document had come to light. And it had been a good idea, too. In the half-day since their arrival, Leia had already begun to feel the tension draining out of her. Getting away from Coruscant was exactly what she'd needed, and she'd taken great pains to mention that to her husband at least twice now, and to thank him for his thoughtfulness. At the moment, unfortunately, all her reassurances were falling on deaf ears. Once again, Han had failed to take into account what Leia privately referred to as the Solo embarrassment factor.
And let us similarly hail and magnify our glorious visitors from the New Republic,
the herald continued, waving his hand in an expansive gesture toward where Han and Leia were stretched out.
May the sublime wisdom, awesome courage, and magnificent honor enlighten the sky above our gathering.
He forgot her uplifted eyebrows,
Han muttered under his breath, as the assembly roared out their greetings.
It's better than Coruscant,
Leia chided him gently, as she half rose and waved.
Come on, Han, be nice.
I'm waving,
Han grumbled, leaning up on one arm and waving reluctantly with the other.
I don't know why they have to do this every hour.
Would you rather have people accusing us of helping cover up attempted genocide?
Leia countered.
I'd rather they just left us alone,
Han said, giving one last wave and then dropping his hand back down. Leia lowered hers as well, and the approving roar of the delegates died away.
Patience, dear,
Leia said, as the herald bowed deeply and yielded the podium to the elaborately dressed grandiose selector.
It's only for the rest of the day. You can put up with it that long. Tomorrow we'll head over to Packrick Minor and get all that peace and quiet you promised me.
It just better be real peaceful and quiet,
Han warned, looking around at the crowd of delegates.
It will be,
Leia assured him, reaching over to squeeze his hand.
They may be all pomp and pageantry here on Packrick Major, but over there among the tall grain farms, we probably won't find anyone who even recognizes us.
Han snorted, but even as he did, Leia could sense a lightening of his mood.
Sure,
he said.
We'll see.
Carib?
With a wince of tired knees, Carib Devist got up from where he'd been crouching, careful not to bump into either of the two rows of tall green pressing close around him.
I'm over here, Sabmin,
he called, waving his coring tool as high over the stalks as he could reach.
I see you,
Sabmin called back. There was the crackle of brittle leaves being brushed against, and then Sabmin emerged through a gap in the row.
I had to come, right?
He broke off, frowning at the tool in Carib's hand.
Uh-oh. Save the uh-ohs for polite company, Carib said sourly. Just say Shavit and mean it.
Sabmin hissed softly between his teeth.
How many colonies?
He asked.
So far just the one,
Carib said, waving the corer toward the tall grain stalk he'd been digging into.
And I did find an empress, so it's possible I got the whole infestation, but I wouldn't bet money on it. I'll alert the others,
Sabmin said.
Probably should get word to the Tri-Valley coordinator, too, in case this isn't the only valley the bugs are moving into.
Yeah,
Carib eyed his brother.
And what wonderful news have you brought me?
Sabmin's lips compressed.
We just got confirmation from Bastion,
he said quietly.
New Republic High Councillor Leia Organa Solo is definitely over on Packrick Major, and the attack on her is definitely on.
Reflexively, Carib glanced up at the half-lit planet hanging in the sky overhead.
They must be crazy, he said.
Attack a new Republic High Councillor just like that?
I don't think they really cared who they got to attack, so long as it was a new Republic official,
Sabmin said.
Apparently the Grandiose Elector sent out a blanket invitation to Coruscant asking for a representative. My guess is that the request was prodded by some Imperial plant, with an eye to the fact that we were already in place here and could act as backup. It was just luck that Gavrasim decided to send Organa solo.
Here, Kareb said darkly. Luck. Did this come over Grand Admiral Thrawn's personal authorization?
I don't know, Sabmin said. The notice didn't say. But it has to have come from him, doesn't it? I mean, if he's in command, then he's in command.
I suppose so,
Kareb conceded reluctantly. So there it was. The war was about to be brought suddenly and violently to the Pakrik system. Right to their doorstep. And the long wait was over. The quiet existence of Imperial Sleeper Cell Genth 44 was about to come to an end.
You say we're the backup. Who's the primary?
I don't know, Sabmin said. Some tag team in from Bastion for the occasion, I guess.
And when is it supposed to happen?
Tomorrow, Sabmin said. Organa Solo and her husband are supposed to be coming over here to Minor once the conference breaks up.
And there's no indication whether the attack is real or just supposed to look real?
Sabmin gave him a startled look, an expression that quickly turned knowing and thoughtful.
Interesting point, he said. With Thrawn involved, you can't take anything for granted, can you? No, all I know is that there's an attack coming, and that we're supposed to stand by ready in case Solo's better or luckier than expected.
Kareb grimaced.
I suppose even Solo's luck has to run out sooner or later.
Yeah.
Sabmin eyed him suspiciously.
What are you thinking?
Kareb looked up at the sky again.
I'm thinking we have to play this by ear,
he said quietly.
One thing's for sure, though. If the battle comes anywhere near our valley, no matter who's winning, we're definitely not going to just sit by and watch. We've invested too much here to let it go without a fight.
Sabmin nodded.
Understood, he said soberly. I'll pass the word to the others. Whatever happens tomorrow, we'll be ready.
Ahead, through the alien greenery, a stand of gnarled trees brushed past the screen to Pelion's left, and the AT-AT simulator bucked to the right in response.
Watch those trees, Admiral,
Major Rain's voice warned in his helmet headphone.
You probably won't knock yourself over that way, but I've seen walkers get hung up so bad you had to send a couple of troopers down to blow the tree off at the roots. Takes time, and you're a sitting flink until you get free.
Acknowledged,
Pelion said, easing over away from the trees. Simulated AT-AT combat, frustrating though it could be sometimes, was far enough outside his normal command duties that it was actually a form of relaxation for him. Though, of course, nothing that included combat was ever truly outside a Supreme Commander's duties. The better Pelion understood how mechanized equipment handled on difficult terrain, the better he would know how to deploy them in future operations. Assuming, of course, the Empire ever again had occasion to launch ground assaults. Firmly, he shook the thought away. One of the reasons for coming down here, after all, had been to distract himself from the continued and frustrating lack of response to his peace offer on the New Republic's part. He was past the stand of trees now, easing back on his speed. He keyed for a side view to see how Rains was handling the jungle. Very straightforwardly, actually. Keeping an eye farther ahead than Pelion was doing, he was using his forward laser cannon to cut down potential obstacles well before they became a problem. A fairly noisy technique, of course, and one that gave any enemies that much more advanced warning. On the other hand, AT-ATs were hardly the weapon of choice where stealth was required, and Rain's method was definitely moving him through the jungle faster than Pelion. Lifting his gaze, trying to stifle the reflexive impulse to watch where his AT-AT was about to step, he squeezed off a few tentative shots.
That's the way, Admiral,
Rain said approvingly.
Just try to anticipate where the trouble's going to be before you're too close to aim the guns where they can do any good.
Pelion grunted.
Better yet, avoid using AT-ATs entirely in this situation.
Whatever we can,
Rain said.
Unfortunately, troublemakers like to hide themselves in places like this, and then put up energy shields over their heads. Besides, there's nothing like an AT-AT clumping through the trees to scare the sneer off someone's face.
There was a click from the headset.
Admiral, this is Ardiff.
The Chimera's captain's voice came.
Lieutenant Mavron is on his way in.
There was just the briefest pause.
He reports, sir, that he has a vector.
Pelion felt his eyes narrow. Mavron's mission had been a long shot, one last attempt to find out something about the force that had hit them 6 days ago. If he said he'd found a vector...
Have him report to Ready Room 14 as soon as he docks,
he instructed Ardiff, shutting off the simulator.
I'll meet you there.
Ardiff was waiting alone in the ready room when Pelion arrived.
I assumed this was to be a private meeting, so I cleared the other pilots out, he explained. Is this about that holonet search?
I hope so,
Pelion said, waving him to one of the chairs around the central monitor table and sitting down himself.
Ah, Lieutenant,
he added, as the door slid open and Mavron stepped inside.
Welcome home. A vector, you said?
Yes, sir,
Mavron said, setting a datapad down on the monitor table and easing himself into a chair with the peculiar stiffness of a man who has been sitting in a starfighter cockpit for too long.
The holonet relay at Horska did indeed still have their records for transmissions from this area just after that raid against us.
You were able to pull them all, I presume?
Pelion asked, picking up the datapad.
Yes, sir, Mavron said. Unfortunately, I couldn't get any names, but I did get endpoints for the transmissions.
He nodded toward the datapad.
I took the liberty of sifting through them on the way back. The one I marked struck me as the most interesting.
Pelion felt his jaw tighten as he found the lieutenant's mark.
Bastion.
Ardiff rumbled deep in his throat. So it was an Imperial behind that attack.
There's more, Mavron said. The original endpoint was Bastion, but then it got relayed a few more times and wound up somewhere in the Croctar system.
Croctar system? Ardiff said, frowning.
That's deep in New Republic territory. What would someone from Bastion be doing there? I wondered that too,
Mavron said, his voice suddenly grim.
So I stopped off at Corsito on the way back here and pulled a copy of the Tri-Nebulon for that day. If the timings are correct, a few hours after that transmission, the unified factions of Croctar announced that a treaty had been negotiated between themselves and the Empire. The mediator of record, well, according to Lord Superior Boss Mihi, it was Grand Admiral Thrawn.
An icy chill ran up Pelion's back.
That's impossible,
he said, his voice sounding strange in his ears.
Thrawn is dead. I watched him die.
Yes, sir,
Mavron said, nodding.
But according to the report...
I watched him die,
Pelion thundered. The sudden outburst surprised even him. It certainly startled Ardiff and Mavron.
Yes, sir, we know, Ardiff said. Obviously, it's some kind of trick. Lieutenant, I imagine the rest can wait until you file your complete report. Why don't you go get yourself cleaned up? Thank you, sir,
Mavron said, clearly glad to be given the opportunity to escape.
I'll have my report filed within an hour.
Very good, Ardiff nodded. Dismissed.
He waited until Mavron had gone, and then the door was once again closed before speaking.
It is a trick, Admiral, he said to Pelion. It has to be.
With an effort, Pelion pulled his thoughts back from the memories of that awful day at Vilbringi. The day the Empire had finally and irrevocably died.
Yes.
Yes, he murmured. But what if it's not? What if Thrawn really is still alive?
Why, in that case... Ardiff trailed off, his forehead wrinkled in sudden uncertainty.
Exactly,
Pelion said, nodding.
The time when Thrawn's tactical genius could have done us any good was... When? 5 years ago? 7? 10? What could he possibly do now except bring the New Republic down on us in panic?
I don't know, sir. Ardiff paused. But that's not what's really bothering you. Pelion looked down at his hands. Old hands. Gnarled with age and darkened by the sunlight of 1,000 worlds.
I was with Thrawn for just over a year,
he told Ardiff.
I was his senior fleet officer, his student.
He hesitated.
Perhaps even his confidant. I'm not sure. The point is that he chose the Chimera and me when he returned from the unknown regions. He didn't just pick us at random. He chose us.
No, there wasn't much Thrawn did at random, Ardiff agreed. From which it follows that if he's back...
Then he's chosen someone else.
Pelion finished the other's sentence. The words a sharp ache in his heart.
There can be only a very few reasons why he would do that.
It can't be position, Ardiff said firmly. You are Supreme Commander, after all. And it certainly can't be competence. What's left?
Vision, perhaps,
Pelion suggested, tapping the data pad gently with a fingertip.
This peace proposal was my idea, you know. I came up with it. I argued for it. And I crammed it down the Moff's throats. Moff Deesra was one of those who loudly and strongly opposed it. Moff Deesra of Bastion. Coincidence?
For a moment, Ardiff was silent. All right, he said. Even if we grant all that, which I don't, by the way, why send a pirate or mercenary group out here to attack us? Why not simply come here and tell you directly that the treaty idea's off?
I don't know,
Pelion said.
Perhaps it isn't off. Perhaps this is exactly where Thrawn wants me to be. Either preparing to talk to Bel Iblis for whatever reason, or else...
He pursed his lips.
Or else simply out of his way. Or I can't interfere with whatever he's planning.
The silence this time stretched out painfully.
I don't believe he would do that to you, sir, Ardiff said at last.
But the words carried no genuine conviction that Pelion could hear.
Not after all you went through together?
You don't believe that any more than I do,
Pelion said quietly.
Thrawn wasn't human, you know. No matter how human he might have looked, he was an alien, with alien thoughts and purposes and agendas. Perhaps I was never more to him than just one more tool he could use in reaching his goal, whatever that goal was.
Almost hesitantly, Ardiff reached over and touched Pelion's arm.
It's been a long road, sir, he said. Long and hard and discouraging for all of us, but mostly for you. If there's anything I can do...
Pelion forced a smile.
Thank you, Captain. Don't worry. I'm not going to give up. Not until I've seen this through.
We're staying here, then? Ardiff asked.
For a few more days,
Pelion said.
I want to give Bel Iblis every possible chance.
And if he doesn't show?
Whether he does or not, we'll be going to Bastion next,
Pelion said, hearing a touch of grimness in his voice.
For this and other matters, Moff Deesra has some explaining to do.
Yes, sir, Ardiff said, standing up. We'll hope that this whole Thrawn appearance is just some trick of his.
We most certainly will not,
Pelion reproved him mildly.
Thrawn's return would revitalize our people and bring nothing but good to the Empire. I would never want it said that I valued my own pride above that.
Artif colored slightly.
No, sir, of course not. My apologies, Admiral.
No apologies necessary, Captain.
Pelion assured him, getting to his feet.
As you said, it's been a long, hard road. But it's nearly over. One way or another, it's nearly over.
The entry procedures at the Dreb Starn spaceport were considerably tighter today than they'd been the last time Drend Navit had landed here on the Bothan homeworld. Hardly surprising, considering the events of the past 5 days. With the surprise Larison attack against their orbital manufacturing plant, and the subsequent multi-species military buildup in the sky overhead, tensions were growing at a rapid and eminently satisfying pace. And the Bothans' normally business-friendly procedures had suffered as a result. Once little more than a formality, exit from the spaceport quarantine area now required a complete ID check and cargo scan. Not that that mattered to Navit. This time through, there was nothing in his cargo that would raise even a paranoid Bothan's fur. And his ID was as perfect as only Imperial intelligence could make them.
Your identification and personal effects appear to be in order,
the Bothan customs official said after the 15-minute procedure that seemed to be the norm today.
However, the importation department will have to run further tests on your animals before they can be allowed into the city proper.
Sure, no problem,
Navit said, waving his hand in one of the expansive gestures typical of the Batrisley district on Veggie, where his ID claimed he'd been born. He had no idea whether the Bothan would notice subtleties of that sort, but the first law of infiltration was to wear a role the way a stormtrooper wore his armor.
Hey, I've done this on dozens of planets, he added. I know how this quarantine thing works.
The Bothan's fur rippled, just noticeably.
On many worlds, you say?
He asked.
Is there some problem you have with maintaining ownership of your shops?
Navit frowned, as if trying to decipher his way through a complicated sentence, then let his face clear.
Nah, you got it all wrong, he said. I'm not trying to set up a place I can settle down in. Besides, unless you got a bunch of guys to run the racks for you, you can't make a go of the exotic pet business unless you keep moving. Lot of potential stock you'll never even hear about unless you go where they come from.
Perhaps,
the Bothan murmured.
But I suspect you will not find much of a market on Bothawee in these troubled times.
You kidding?
Navit said, letting some oily smugness show through.
Hey, this place is perfect! A planet under siege, lots of tension. That's exactly where folks are going to need a pet to get their minds off their troubles. Trust me, I've seen it happen dozens of times.
If you say so,
the Bothan said with a ripple of his shoulder fur. Obviously not caring whether this slightly uncouth alien made a profit here or not.
Leave me your comlink frequency and code, and you'll be notified when the quarantine is ended.
Thanks,
Navit said, collecting his documents together.
Make it fast, okay?
It will be as quick as regulations require,
the Bothan said.
A day of peace and profit to you.
Yeah, same to you.
5 minutes later, Navit was walking down the street, jostling his way through the mass of travelers hurrying in and out of the spaceport. Passing up the rows of four higher landspeeders, he put his back to the setting sun and headed off on foot toward a row of cheap hotels bordering the spaceport area. With his back to the sun, he spotted the shadow coming up behind him a few seconds before Cliff dropped into step at his side.
Any problems?
The other asked quietly.
No, it went real smooth,
Navit said.
You?
Cliff shook his head.
Not a one. He took the bribe, by the way.
But he wouldn't promise we'd get the animals out any sooner.
Not with a bribe that small, Navid agreed, smiling to himself.
An insultingly small gratuity from the pet dealer's assistant, and none at all from the dealer himself, ought to nicely reinforce their carefully constructed image as small-timers trying to turn a fast profit without the slightest idea how the game was played. And with the Bothans, an image like that practically guaranteed them to be the focus of private amusement, backroom contempt, and complete official disinterest. Which meant that when the time was right for the Drevstarn section of the Bothawi planetary shield to come down, it would.
"You see Horvick or Penson in there?" Cliff asked. "I didn't spot either of them."
"No, but I'm sure they got in all right," Navid said. "We can tap their rendezvous point tomorrow if we can find a shop fast enough."
"I picked up a rental listing," Cliff said. "Most of them come with apartments above them."
"That'll be handy," Navid said. "We'll look through it tonight and see if there's anything in the right area. If not, we can always check in with a rental agent in the morning."
Cliff chuckled.
"Don't worry. We've got plenty of bribe money left."
"Yes,"
Navid murmured, looking around. 15 years ago, according to rumor, it had been information from Bothan spies that had led the Rebel Alliance to Endor and resulted in the death of Emperor Palpatine and the destruction of the second Death Star. In the years since then, Bothans had been involved with the Black Sun organization, the destruction of Mount Tantus, and any number of other blows against the Empire. He didn't know the full scope of the plan that was underway here. But of all the worlds Grand Admiral Thrawn might have chosen for destruction, few would have given him more personal satisfaction than this one. They had reached their chosen hotel now, and as they started up their steps, an ancient droid standing warden beside the door stirred himself.
"Good even, good sirs,"
he wheezed.
"May I call for a baggage carrier?"
"Nah, we can handle them," Navid said. "No sense wasting good money on a droid."
"But, sir, the service is free,"
the droid said, sounding confused. But by then, Navid and Cliff were past him, pushing through the doors and strolling into the lobby. They were, he noted, the only hotel guests carrying their own bags. But that was all right. Let the Bothans and their more sophisticated guests snicker at them behind their backs if they chose. When the fire began to rain from the sky, the laughter would turn to screams of terror, and Navid would be enjoying every minute of it.
Chapter 6.
It was on her 15th day in the darkness of the Nirawan cave when Mara Jade awoke to discover a rescuer had finally arrived. It was not, however, any of the potential rescuers she would have expected.
"Mara?"
She sat up suddenly in her bedroll, blinking her eyes reflexively open, despite the fact that in the pitch darkness there was absolutely nothing to see. The sense of someone calling to her had been wordless, but as clear as if her name had been spoken aloud. She stretched out with the force, and as she did so, the sense of his presence came drifting into her. His presence, and his identity. It was Luke. The tone of his emotions changed, the hard edge of anxiety permeating it, turning abruptly to relief as he sensed her response and knew that she was unhurt. A new touch of anticipation flowed into his mind, and as she focused, she could sense a physical darkness around him. Best guess was that he was in the cave, she decided, probably working his way her direction, which unfortunately meant that his anticipation was a bit premature. Finding the cave was one thing. Finding each other within its multiple twistings was going to be something else entirely. But Luke already had that covered. To her wordless question came a renewed sense of assurance from him. and even as she frowned, she caught a sense of others around him, beings who he seemed to be following. Apparently, some of the Minok-like creatures who had hauled her in here in the first place were acting as guides. She looked up at the ceiling and walls around her. More of the creatures were up there, silently watching her.
Skywalker's coming, she called up into the darkness. You happy?
They were. Even with her frustrating inability to hear their words directly, there was no mistaking the surge of excitement that rippled through them.
I'm so pleased, she said.
Standing up, she felt her way toward the subterranean creek, gurgling its way through the rock a few meters away. She'd picked this spot early on in her captivity as a place where she would have water available, and in the days since then had learned to navigate the trip without using her glow rod. She reached the creek, located the conveniently placed flat rock where she kept the small bottle of personal cleaning solution from her survival kit, and stripped off her jumpsuit. The outfit itself was one of the top-of-the-line brands that was standard issue aboard Card ships and shrugged off dirt and oils with ease. Mara herself, unfortunately, did not. And if she had company coming, it seemed only reasonable to make herself presentable. The water was shallow, swift-moving, and icy cold. Mara splashed it all over herself, trying not to sputter too much with the thermal shock. A few drops of cleaning solution rubbed vigorously into skin and hair. Another agonizing dip into the liquid ice of the creek to rinse off. And she was through. An only marginally warmer breeze flowed along the same path as the water and she stood in the draft for a few minutes, brushing off excess water and fluffing her hair until she was mostly dry. Getting back into her jumpsuit, she collected her things and headed back to her encampment. Just in time. She was still sorting her equipment back into their proper niches in her pack when she caught the first flickers of reflected light against the rocky walls and high ceiling. Rolling up her bedroll and tucking it into her pack, she sat down on her chair, another mostly flat rock, and waited. It seemed to take an inordinate amount of time before the bouncing light finally resolved itself into a Jedi Master carrying a glow rod. But when it did, she finally understood the reason for the slow trip. Luke himself was burdened down with what looked like the sort of everything but a set of alluvial dampers survival kit Card's people like to put together. And trundling awkwardly but gamely along beside him on the uneven ground was his R2 astromech droid.
Mara?
Luke called, his voice echoing through the cave.
Right here,
Mara called back, standing up and waving her glow rod.
You sure took your time.
Sorry, he said dryly, making his way to her. We couldn't find the local airspeed or hire stand and had to walk.
You look good.
You look terrible,
she countered, running a critical eye over him. His jacket and the jumpsuit beneath it were stained with dirt and sweat, and dotted here and there with small rips and punctures.
How far did you walk, anyway? Halfway around the planet?
No, only about 10 kilometers,
he said, shrugging the pack off his shoulders onto the ground and running a hand through his hair.
But it was cliffs and wilderness all the way.
And thorn bushes, apparently,
Mara added, gesturing toward the tears in his jumpsuit.
You want to get cleaned up? There's a stream right over there that doesn't have too much ice floating in it.
The droid gurgled.
Maybe later,
Luke said.
How have they been treating you?
Mara shrugged.
Ambiguously,
she said.
At first I thought I was being held prisoner, but they didn't seem to mind if I moved around the immediate area, so I thought I might have been mistaken. On the other hand, they also wouldn't let me go too far in any direction, and they've still got my lightsaber and the blaster they took from me.
Your blaster?
Yes, my blaster,
Mara said, putting a drop-it tone into her voice. The aliens had taken both of her main weapons, but they'd missed the tiny backup blaster snugged in its holster against her left forearm. Up till now, she hadn't had occasion to use it, but she didn't want Luke announcing its existence either.
And my lightsaber,
she repeated.
So now I'm not sure what's going on.
Yes, my Quamja guides told me you have trouble understanding them, Luke said. Apparently he'd gotten the message about the blaster. It sounds to me like the reason they brought you in here was to keep you safe.
I was afraid of that,
Mara said, feeling her cheeks warming and hoping the chagrin didn't show. Bad enough that someone had had to come all the way out here to the edge of unknown space to rescue her after she walked the side of her head into that rock. Even worse that it had to be Luke Skywalker, Jedi Master, who probably had a million better things to do with his time. But for the rescue to be from what was essentially an impromptu alien babysitting service was embarrassing beyond words.
Don't worry about it,
Luke said quietly. She blushed harder.
Blast it, Skywalker! Stay out of my mind!
She felt his own flush of embarrassment at the unintended intrusion.
Sorry, he apologized. But I didn't mean it that way. They say they needed to protect you because you were being hunted by the Threateners from the High Tower.
Mara frowned, her embarrassment abruptly forgotten.
The Threateners?
That's the Quamja name for them, Luke said. Being similar to us, they say, and allied with the Empire.
Terrific,
Mara murmured. With her attention these past few days focused on survival and the exploration of her surroundings, the reason why she'd come to Nerevan in the first place had rather been lost in the back of her mind. But now it was suddenly back in a rush. The mysterious spaceship she and Luke had spotted, skulking around the Kavrilu pirate base, and the one that later had buzzed Booster Tarek's private Star Destroyer. Alien beings and alien technology, but with a distinctly Imperial flavor mixed into the design.
So we were right, she said. They were hunting for Imperials at the Kavrilu base.
It's starting to sound that way, Luke said. Though don't forget, we only have the Quamja word for that. We'll need to check it out for ourselves. Mara eyed him.
So they can talk to you, huh?
Through the Force, yes. Luke paused, eyes slightly unfocused as if he were listening to a faint sound. Mara stretched out to the Force herself, but aside from the creature's normal chirping, she could still catch only the familiar almost voices making almost words.
You can't hear that? He asked. Not understandably,
Mara admitted. The thought annoyed her almost as much as having to be rescued.
What are they saying?
At the moment, not much, Luke said. They're waiting for their bargainer to arrive. I gather from an earlier conversation I had with a group called the Quam Quay that that's the local term for leader or spokesman.
Ah.
Mara frowned as a ripple of displeasure ran through the almost voices.
I get the distinct feeling they don't like the Quam Quay very much.
Yes, I know, Luke agreed, his tone a little uneasy. Actually, it may be partially my fault. I think they're displeased that I brought a Quam Quay in here with me.
Not necessarily the most politic thing you could have done.
He spent the last couple of days guiding me here, Luke said, sounding a little defensive. He wanted to come inside and see you, and I decided he'd earned that much. Besides, whatever's going on probably concerns both groups.
Could be.
Mara glanced around them.
Where's this guide of yours?
Up there somewhere, Luke said, playing the beam from his glow rod around the ceiling. Each of the Minok-like Quamja twitched as the spot of light passed, shying away from the glare. All except one, a somewhat smaller creature whose leathery hide seemed to be a slightly different color than that of the beings clustered closely around him. Also unlike the others, who hung casually from cracks or bumps in the ceiling, he was perched awkwardly upright on a rock jutting out from the wall.
That him?
Mara asked. Yes, Luke said, holding the light there a moment, and then turning it back toward the ground.
He's called Child of Winds.
Mara nodded, thinking back to her flight in through the deep canyon and all the small caves she'd noticed pockmarking the rock walls along the way.
I take it the Quam Quay are cliff dwellers?
His nesting is, anyway, Luke said. His father is also their bargainer.
Friends in high places,
Mara said.
That could be handy.
I'm not sure friends is exactly the word I would have used,
Luke said dryly.
They seem to have made off with my X-Wing when I wasn't looking. And Child of Winds either can't or won't tell me where they took it. It must have taken a whole lot of them to even move it.
It did,
Mara said with a grimace.
I know because I watched the Quam Ja do the same thing with my defender, hauling it into the cave to who knows where. Looks like they've got more in common with the Quam Quay than they might like.
Actually, your defender isn't very far away, Luke said. R2 and I spotted it on our way in. He gave it a quick scan. It didn't seem to be damaged.
That's a relief,
Mara said, a small amount of the weight lifting from her back. The defender might be useless for getting her home, but without it, she couldn't even get off the ground.
After everything Card went through to get his hands on it, he'd kill me if I lost it. When's he getting here with backup?
Luke winced.
Well, to be honest, I told him not to send anyone else.
Mara felt her mouth go a little dry.
Did you now?
She said, striving to keep her voice calm. If Luke was starting to slip back into his old omnipotent Jedi habits...
You don't think the two of us tackling a whole fortress full of unknown enemies is giving us too much of an advantage, do you?
The odd look flicked across his face.
That's not it at all,
he protested.
I just didn't think it would be a good idea for a full battle force to come storming into the system, especially since we didn't know whether or not you were a prisoner.
I suppose that makes sense,
Mara conceded, the knots untying a little.
I guess that means you don't have a Star Cruiser skulking in the outer system either.
I doubt the New Republic could spare even an armed transport right now,
Luke said, his expression turning grim.
Things are getting very nasty out there.
Let me guess. Ka-Moss and the Bothans?
Ka-Moss, the Bothans, and 1,000 worlds using Ka-Moss as an excuse to pick up on old grudges against their neighbors.